Welcome to David Maister's Business Masterclass, a series of advanced business seminars exploring principles and practices for success in professional businesses.
Hello, I'm David Maister. This is Real Professionalism, the second episode of my series on career development. We're going to explore the key attitudes and character traits that make someone a true professional. I frequently ask my speech audiences to tell me what they consider to be the difference between a good secretary and a great secretary. The answers flow freely. But before I read out the list to you, let me give you my main punchline. First and foremost, the list is applicable to all of us, not just to secretaries. With virtually no modifications, what you're about to hear is what makes all of us a professional. What makes a secretary great could serve as the defining characteristic of what differentiates a great consultant from a good one, a great lawyer from a good one, and so on. So here's the list. Great secretaries, I'm told, take pride in their work and show a personal commitment to quality. Reach out for responsibility. Anticipate and don't wait to be told what to do. Great secretaries show initiative. Great secretaries do whatever it takes to get the job done. Great secretaries get involved and don't just stick to their assigned role. Great secretaries, we say, are always looking for ways to make things easier for those they serve. Great secretaries are eager to learn as much as they can about the business of those they serve so that they can serve them better. Great secretaries really listen to the needs of those they serve. They learn to understand and think like those they serve so that they can represent them well when they're not there. Great secretaries are team players. Great secretaries can be trusted with confidences. They're honest, trustworthy, and loyal. And finally, great secretaries are open to constructive critiques on how to improve. What a list! All of this can be summarized in one phrase: great secretaries care. Notice that this list has nothing to do with technical skills. Few secretaries are deemed to be great because of their ability to type 95 words a minute or file documents in nanoseconds. Similarly, very few of us become known as great purely as a result of technical abilities. The opposite of the word professional is not unprofessional. I think the opposite of the word professional is technician. Technicians may be highly skilled, but they aren't full professionals until they reliably and consistently demonstrate the characteristics listed above. Professionalism is predominantly an attitude, not a set of competencies. A real professional is a technician who cares. You may recall the old slogan, "People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care." Yet how many of us are prepared to be accountable for behaving according to the standards set by the list I've just read out? Yet we often ask those in administrative roles who earn a fraction of what professionals earn to meet those standards. This raises an interesting question. Why would administrative staff be willing to strive for such standards? Why would anyone who isn't sharing a big share of the profits be willing to demonstrate this level of commitment? To find out, I asked Julie O'Leary, who began as my secretary and who was for 17 years my business manager. Julie met and exceeded every one of the standards listed above. This is what she had to say. "Professional," she said, "is not a label you give yourself. It's a description you hope others will apply to you. You do the best you can as a matter of self-respect. Having self-respect is the key to earning respect and trust from others. And in turn, if you want to be trusted and respected, you do have to earn it." These behaviors, said Julie, lead to job fulfillment as well. The question should really be, why wouldn't somebody want to do this? If someone took a job or started a career worrying only about what's in it for them, looking to do just enough to get by, or being purely self-serving in their performance, they will, says Julie, go nowhere. Even if they manage to excel through the ranks as a good technician, they won't be happy in what they're doing. Julie says the work will become boring, aggravating, tiresome, and a drag. It should be clear from this why I consider Julie O'Leary to be more of a professional than many of the lawyers and consultants and accountants and engineers and actuaries that I meet. I sometimes worried that her professional standards exceeded my own. If you've ever been a buyer of professional services or an employer, you'll probably agree that finding people with the right technical skill is not that hard. But finding people who behave consistently in the ways described above is very difficult. It's rare to find individuals, and even harder to find whole firms, filled with the energy, enthusiasm, and the personal commitment to excellence that Julie has shown. Why is this? Part of the problem, I believe, lies in what people think professionalism is. As we've seen, real professionalism has little, if anything, to do with what business you're in, what role within that business you perform, or how many degrees you have. Rather, professionalism is about a pride in work, a commitment to quality, a dedication to the interests of the clients, and a sincere desire to help. However, traditional definitions of professionalism are filled with reference to other things: status, educational attainments, noble callings, and things like the rights of practitioners to be self-governing, to autonomy, the right to practice free of direction. All of these definitions are self-interested. As George Bernard Shaw suggested, all professions are conspiracies against the laity. Perhaps one reason for the scarcity of real professionalism may be that the recruiting process in professional firms is flawed. Real professionalism is about attitudes and perhaps even about character. Yet few firms screen very effectively for this in their hiring, either at the entry level or when bringing in more experienced lateral entry hires. Most hiring processes are about educational qualifications and technical skills. As Julie once pointed out, firms should hire for attitude and train for skill. Skills you can teach, attitudes and character, are inherent. They can be suppressed or encouraged to develop, but they have to be there to begin with. Another of my favorite discussion questions to ask people is, why do you do what you do? Obviously, things like money, meaning, and intellectual challenge are important, but the one I always listen for is, I like helping people. If the last one is missing, I know I'm speaking to someone in trouble. Too many people don't do what they do because they want to help their clients. They're in it only for the money or for the personal prestige. In my view, such people may become good and even earn good incomes, but they'll never be considered great. In recent years, many firms have debated the question, are we a profession or are we a business? I've found many of these debates to be completely misconceived. Those who argue we are a business say that they cannot afford the laissez-faire management approaches of the past and must focus more on financial realities. In reply, those who have argued that they are a profession appeal to the needs for professional fulfillment, autonomy, and freedom from bureaucratic constraints. In my view, both sides are wrong because they're both looking for what they get out of things. Being a professional is neither about money nor about professional fulfillment. Both of these things are outcomes. They are consequences of an unqualified dedication to excellence in serving your clients and their needs. As Dale Carnegie wrote many years ago, you'll have more fun and success helping other people achieve their goals than you will trying to reach your own goals first. A related problem may be how people are being socialized into the professions by schools and by their firms. I suspect that many don't truly understand what professional life is really all about. For example, in recent years, I've seen many so-called professionals undergo a form of status shock. An acquaintance of mine, a top-of-the-class MBA type, recently left the consulting profession after many years with a top-tier firm because he said, in the early years, clients gave me respect because I solved their problems. But now I'm treated like a vendor. They question my recommendations, make me justify everything I plan to do on their behalf, and they watch my spending like a hawk. I'm not used, he said, to being in the subservient role, and I don't like it. This acquaintance was and is entirely accurate about how significant the changes have been in how clients deal with professionals. In the past, professionals were often given respect and trust automatically because of their position. That's no longer true. However, what people fail to understand is that it is still possible to be treated with respect and trust, but now you really have to know how to earn it and deserve it. None of this should be a surprise. As Bob Dylan once wrote, you gotta serve somebody. Perhaps it's time for our schools and our professional firms and for ourselves to stop teaching students that they're the best and the brightest, the special elite and the noblest profession of all, whatever that happens to be. Maybe schools and organizations should find ways to teach more about what it is to serve a client and how to work with people, whether they be your junior, your senior, or your colleague. When I talk with business school alumni about their careers and what they would do differently, the most common reply I get is, I wish I'd paid more attention to the courses about dealing with people. If you review the list of behaviors above, commitment to quality, reaching out for responsibility, do what it takes to get the job done, it should be obvious that people who actually exhibited these behaviors would in fact be on a fast-track path to economic success. They'd be trusted, they'd be promoted, they'd be hired, they'd be recommended. As Julie pointed out, it is doing those things that earn your respect and trust, whether from colleagues or boss or from clients. If this is true, that professionalism works to get you somewhere, then why don't more people operate this way? I pose this question frequently to groups ranging from senior people to secretaries. I must report that the most common reply I hear is, well, I'm not compensated for doing all those things. Now, this is, of course, a catch-22. In most organizations, you would be rewarded eventually if you behave this way. But if you wait to be rewarded before you do it, pay me and then I'll do it, you'll probably wait forever. The problem, then, is that people may be too short-term in their thinking. They're focusing only on their job and their rewards, not on their career. The noble path does win, but only if you're prepared to make the investment to act professionally over a long period of time. Another factor that suppresses people's desire to act professionally, at least in the terms in which I've defined it, is the environment in which they work, how they're managed. It's easier to find the discipline and the motivation to behave professionally if everyone around you is doing the same. However, I'm frequently told that this is not the case. I often hear comments like, why should I strive for excellence to go the extra mile when it's clear that many other people are only doing just enough to get by? I'd be willing to participate if everyone else was behaving this way, but it gets pretty demotivating to be the only one really trying with nobody noticing. What this comment points out is that even if you have an organization filled with attitude who have the potential, the attitude and character to be real professionals, it's all too easy to fall into the trap of creating an environment that demotivates them. If those at the top are not living, breathing exemplars of real professionalism, it's easy for those lower down to conclude that commitment and professionalism are optional. They're not required around here. So what is it that encourages people to act professionally and creates the environment that allows real professionals to flourish? The answers are as old as the hills, even if they are frequently forgotten. Here's Julie's advice again. Remember to show appreciation to the one who has taken that extra step or surprised you with an exceptional performance. This will breed more enthusiasm and more good work. Don't be afraid to give people ever more responsible assignments. Trust them, and if it doesn't come out perfectly, let them try again after you've given them some pointers. Everyone likes a challenge. Get people involved. Share reports, conversations, information about competitors and clients, so that everyone can see the big picture and how they fit into it. Constructive critiques, says Julie, are one of the most powerful learning tools available to the employer and to the employee. Take the time to help people learn, not as a matter of performance appraisal, nor as an issue of compensation, but simply as a sincere desire to help them improve. Finally, Julie says, don't promote teamwork and then only recognize the captain. Make sure recognition is given to everyone in some way. It doesn't have to be money. It can be as simple as saying, well done, take a friend to lunch, it's on me. Work hard to make people feel part of what's going on. To Julie's comments, I'd add a few of my own. I believe that everyone likes to feel that what you're doing has a purpose, that you're doing something meaningful in the world. If all anyone ever talks about is the money, it gets pretty depressing. You can't just pay people to be dedicated, motivated professionals. You must reward them if they are, but money alone won't do it. Ultimately, you must inspire them to be as professional as they know how to be. To get people to be professionals, you must treat them as professionals and be tolerant of nothing less. Julie's view on this is as follows. If the person has the right character and you treat them as you would want to be treated, they will respond with enthusiasm and commitment. If they don't, then you should reassess what that person is doing working for you. Or maybe they need to reassess if they're in the right job. I hope these thoughts cause the listener, whether you're a boss or a secretary, to ponder two questions that we all need to think about frequently. First, do other people consider me a professional? How well do those I serve think I meet the criteria that we described at the beginning? Second, do I deal with those who work for me in such a way as to encourage their commitment and professionalism? Or do I sometimes act to suppress it? How good am I at bringing out the professionalism in others? This concludes True Professionalism, the second of my series on career development. This episode was based on a chapter in my book, True Professionalism. In forthcoming episodes, we'll talk about making job choices, dealing with clients, and learning how to manage people. This podcast series is now available for purchase, both as a single episode and as part of a DVD set, from my website, davidmaister.com/store, STORE. I'm also pleased to announce that my forthcoming book, Strategy and the Fat Smoker, is available for pre-order from this same location.